It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Good morning, Sandy Rios with you this Monday after Thanksgiving. I hope you had a wonderful time with your families. It was a good time of reflection and that you thought about the foundings of the country and God's central role in laying the groundwork for a nation such as the United States of America, and how our early founding fathers took this time to thank God, not just anybody, but they thanked God for his many, many blessings. And so that's what we did. And I hope that was refreshing, as refreshing for you as it was for me. I want to thank Christian Adams for filling in and also Walker Wildman for filling in while I was gone. Thank you to both of you. I know that you were in excellent hands and you probably hardly missed a beat where the news is concerned. But of course, not so for me. I had to keep up from St. Andrews, Scotland, which I did in spite of, being with our family and our four little ones, four little grandchildren. I tried to keep up with the news, and we're going to get into it in just a second, but often, when I come back from Scotland, will give you just a personal word, which I rarely do because the show is so short, and I feel like the real estate is so valuable, I don't want to take it up with the personal things from me. But I think sometimes it's a good thing for me to share with you. My son, of course, is getting his PhD in theology at St. Andrews, and he's just working so hard. He's working on his paper. He's been there 3 years now, and hoping to finish in another 6 months or so. But we have very interesting discussions, as you can imagine, on what he's writing, and I really enjoy our conversations about what's going on and what he's writing about. We did some really interesting. We didn't do much touring because we don't see our grandchildren very often. Maybe once every 6 months, and that's not very much. For those of you who are grandmothers, you understand they grow so quickly, but we had a wonderful time with them. They are Moses and Kate's and Asa and Lucy, and they go from 10 down to 2. And so it's quite an interesting. They're all very very verbal, as you can imagine. I don't know where they got that. Both of their parents are very verbal, and so all the kids are. They say funny, really funny things. Moses is our 10-year-old, and I take each of them for kind of a private time, and we walked down to the village and had lunch together, had breakfast, actually. We had a scone. We had a scone at the North Point Cafe, which is where Kate and Wills met. That's what it's famous for. So we had a scone, and we talked about all that's going on in the world, and he asked me, out of the clear blue, my grandson Moses asked me why people make fun of Donald Trump. Now, you'd probably think that when I visit with my kids, we talk all politics, right? You think that? No, we don't talk about it hardly at all. And so it's not like there's a narrative in the house about this. So it was completely from out of the blue, this little boy in Scotland who is homeschooled and doesn't really hear the news or see the news, asked me why Donald Trump is the subject of jokes. And so I took a deep breath and did my best to explain it to him in a way that he could understand about how Donald Trump is a very blunt person, which does not sit well in places where people want to pretend that they're nice politicians, smile at you, look at you in the eye, and pretend as though they're your friends. But generally speaking, they're not telling the truth. They're lying. And so in comes this brash guy who blusters his way, tells you what he thinks of you and everything else, and it's very hard for the establishment in Washington to handle that. I talked to him about his immoral past and why that was troubling for many people, but I talked to him about all the really good things he had been doing to save lives in terms of abortion. He didn't know what abortion was, so you can imagine that discussion. And so it was just a real honor. One of my prayers at this point in my life is to have influence on my grandchildren. I pray that all the time, that God would helped me to be a really powerful for the good, plant seeds that they'll never forget about God and who he is, and just pass on from my generation to theirs God's power in this world, in my life, and hopefully in theirs as well. And I see that. That's the amazing thing. I saw that. Before we left, Kate's, who's 8, just took me by the hand and said, "Grandma, will you pray for me?" Privately, she pulled me into the kitchen. "Will you please pray for me?" Which was pretty amazing. Kate's is in ballet, and my husband, Bruce, and I got to go watch her in her practice, and it was just very sweet. I mean, if you can imagine, I'm not sure I can tell this without crying, but my first child, Sasha, was never able to walk, and so Kate's is our first granddaughter, and it's not my custom or my habit to watch my kids do anything, my grandkids. I'm not around them, and so to go see her practice ballet was just, I cried as I watched her. It was so moving to me, and I was so grateful that she has, that she can get around and walk and do things and talk, and she is just an absolutely delightful, precious, loving girl. And then Asa, oh boy, Asa is 6, just turned 6, and his opening statement is always, "Grandpa or Grandma, I have a question. Could I ask you a question?" And then, oh brother, does he ask the questions? And they're never simple. You know, he wanted to know about, okay, I'm just going to be honest. He wanted to know why my first marriage didn't work out. And he has all of these like pointed questions about my age and if I'm going to die and all, this is the kind of conversations we have. But on Thanksgiving Day when we gave our thanks, his thankfulness, my 6-year-old's grandson Asa, was that Jesus died for our sins. He was grateful. Others were talking about, things that they loved, things that they were grateful for, and this is his comment. And so my grandchildren are in good hands. Their mom and their dad are teaching them well, and they are finding their own way. Then there's Lucy. There's Lucy. I'm not sure what to say about Lucy except that she's just in the thick of everything. She's 2 years old, and she actually thinks she's as old as the rest of them. So she's funny. She brings us so many laughs. And I actually think she's going to be our musician. I did a little check with her on the keyboard. I did Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star in about 6 different keys just to see if she could match pitches, and she did. So I was really happy about that. So I think Lucy may be our musician. So that's kind of my personal. Oh, I did want to tell you also, we traveled to Dundee, Scotland. That's the one thing we did do. Oh, and we saw this ship that's been preserved. It was built in the early 1900s, built in Dundee, Scotland, and the ship was constructed for an exploration trip to Antarctica, and so it was amazing to see the pictures of the men and find out their background. Some of them were scientists, some of them were shipbuilders. They built the boat of many, many different kinds of woods fused together to sort of counteract the changes of temperature and the very, very cold temperatures they would face in the Antarctica. And you can imagine they were there for months. I'm not sure if it might have been a year even, doing these experiments. And they got stuck in the ice and had to be rescued. It's just a dramatic, incredible story. But the thing that struck me was the ingenuity. And they built that huge ship with, little tiny tools. They didn't have, like, power saws or all the things that we see with modern building. They had saws and hammers and chisels, and they made this huge ship that is still in excellent condition. It was just fascinating. I loved it. So that was kind of an overview. Oh, I'll tell you one other thing, because I guess I fancy you might find this interesting. One of my sons and daughter-in-law's best friends, a couple, came to join us for Thanksgiving. He is a former London policeman, and he is also the founder of their church, and just a colorful character who really loves God, just fascinating. His name's Toby, and his wife, Carol. Carol was studying to be an actress. She was in the same class with Emma Thompson, and I heard her read scripture on Sunday in church, and she is phenomenal. She probably could have been an Emma Thompson. And what happened with Carol was that she had a dramatic conversion to Jesus Christ. She met an American actress in her class, and this American actress witnessed to Carol about Jesus, and Carol just had a complete transformation of her life and decided that acting was not was just not what she felt God wanted her to do. And so this is the kind of richness that we had this last week while I was away from you. And God was just so good, so many wonderful people. And I see God at work in the world everywhere. And so that was my time in St. Andrews. I just one other kind of aside, this personal thing. I was reading on the plane Saturday, I guess. Boy, talk about a long trip. It was a long trip. We left St. Andrews in the morning. It was an hour to, Edinburgh. It was an hour's ride, taxi ride to Edinburgh, a three-hour wait at the airport, an hour flight to Dublin, a two-hour layover there, and an eight-and-a-half-hour flight back to the United States, and then an hour from the airport. So there was quite a long day. So I had a chance to watch a few movies and read a really great book that I just barely started on, but it's about a Chinese family who had a dynasty, a business dynasty, before Mao Zedong came into China. And it's a fascinating look at the principles that made them so wealthy. The business principles were just a thing of wonder. Really, it sounded like they were written by Christians, about never cheating, about always delivering quality services, about not just handing your children jobs because they're your children. That was one of their principles, that the children then, the onus was on them to prove themselves worthy of whatever task that they were given in the business, and how they built it. Became billionaires, and then, of course, Mao Zedong came into China and started dismantling and making people that were capitalists who ran businesses, making them evil and wicked, taking away their resources, going into their factories, dismantling everything, but also turning the Chinese culture against them. It's just those kinds of things are so enriching and help us to understand, again, and a refresher course for our kids about why freedom is so important, and also why the right kind of free enterprise, one that practices honesty and integrity, how it causes people to flourish, and how socialism kills the spirit, depends on envy and strife in order to work and flourish. And so that was really interesting, another part of my trip. All right, so I come back, and I'm watching the news, and I find out that President Trump it surprises everyone and goes to Afghanistan and serves the troops a meal and encourages them. And, of course, some things never change. A Newsweek reporter basically, rather than her headline for Thanksgiving was that, let's see, President Trump would be tweeting and golfing during Thanksgiving. And that was her headline, which remained on the day when they knew actually that he was in Afghanistan. It was a carefully guarded secret, but she was fired because she just didn't sort it out. She just left it that he was tweeting and golfing. And so then Donald Trump Jr. tweeted something like, fake news, gonna fake. And the president retweeted, I thought Newsweek was out of business, which I actually did too. But that, of course, some things never change. And when I read that, I saw that some things never change. Meanwhile, over Thanksgiving, San Francisco had a record cold day, unbelievably cold for them. It had not been tied since November 27th of 1896, when it was 27 degrees. Also, the Hong Kong protesters got a hold of a poster showing President Trump as Rocky Balboa, but it wasn't a trite thing for them. They were thankful that the president signed two relevant bills defending them on the issue of China and their usurpation of their freedoms. And so they were showing that gratitude by, they were singing American songs and holding up the picture of President Trump as Rocky Balboa, which is kind of funny. But not funny for them and their circumstance, but funny picture, that's for sure. Although some didn't think it was funny, they thought it was the president's way of trying to make himself a strong man, like, well, you guessed it, Vladimir Putin. All right, there's a lot more news, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hi, it's Michael with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. I met 14-year-old Ahmed earlier this year in the Middle East. At 12, he had been recruited to be a suicide bomber. His dad died fighting for ISIS. His mother and seven siblings were radicals, but they embraced the gospel. And when they did, he viewed them as infidels and wanted them dead. But his mom prayed nonstop for his salvation. It came, and when it did, he was beaten nearly to death by the radicals he hung around with. When he and I met earlier this year, he was able to open his Arabic Bible and see where Jesus says, "They'll hate you because they hated me first." But with tears in his eyes, he said, "Michael, there's hundreds of young guys like me going to kill themselves in the name of Allah. We need to save them." And he's led dozens to Christ in a place where they need the Bible. Would you join us in this wonderful work to support the persecuted church?
Call 800-YES-WORD, 800-YESWORD. That's 800-YES-WORD. Or click sendbiblesnow.com. That's sendbiblesnow.com.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Sarah Gorecki, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Housing Counseling. She provides resources to homebuyers covering areas such as financing, home safety, and homeowners' rights. Luke 10:5 reminds us of the importance of a safe and peaceful home. When you enter a house, first say, "Peace to this house." Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Sarah Gorecki as she helps homebuyers. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team. This Christmas season, send a prayer or Christmas greeting to President Trump and his family. Your message will be delivered straight to the Oval Office. It's fun, easy, and it's free. Learn how at pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
What do you see for the next generation? Do you see a prospering nation? Do you see hope? The future is ours to create, and Liberty University is driven to train positive influencers for our country and our culture. Our mission is to guide students toward leadership as servants of the people, defenders of freedom, and champions of truth. Discover how you can impact the next generation of Champions for Christ by texting GIVE to 839-858.
Brooklyn Benzel is a 13-year-old eighth grader, a homeschooler in Northern California. She's taking piano lessons from South Sutter Charter School. The other day, the charter school rejected Brooklyn's piano assignment because it was too religious. Brooklyn had planned on performing Joy to the World. It seems as though the school feared words like Lord and Savior and Heaven might trigger the godless. So the school suggested as an alternative that she play Jingle Bells because it was a more cultural choice that would not be construed as religious. Pacific Justice Institute, a law firm that specializes in religious liberty cases, threatened to get involved at the request of Brooklyn's family, and in a matter of moments, the charter school reversed its decision. The lesson here, instead of quietly accepting the charter school censorship, Brooklyn's mom decided to ring somebody's bells. Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Absolutely deplore the fact that this man was out on the streets. I think it's absolutely repulsive, and we are going to take action against it.
Happened under the Conservatives. It was Conservative legislation and a Conservative regime under which. Would you like to apologise to people for the fact that that happened?
I respectfully repeat to you that his release was necessary under the law because of the automatic early release scheme under which he was sentenced. That was the reality. And that was brought in by Labour with the support of Jeremy Corbyn and the rest of the Labour Party.
I opposed it both in
2003 and in 2008. And now that I am Prime Minister, I'm going to take steps to make sure that people are not released early.
I do need to ask you some questions. That's the way it goes.
Yes, all right. So that was Boris Yeltsin being interviewed on British television. And the reason I played that for you was because Boris Johnson. That was not Boris Yeltsin. There reminds me of something I said a long time ago. I'd have to explain it, but I have a history of misspeaking funny things. But anyway, yes, Boris Johnson, who is the Prime Minister of Great Britain, that was him talking to a BBC person who's obviously very hostile to him because there's the BBC is so far left. They have been for years. And it's amazing, honestly, that Boris Johnson has gotten to the point where he has. So he's talking about the knife attack that happened on the London Bridge, and back to the personal, when we were in the airport at Edinburgh, all the newspapers, of course, had headlines about the stabbing that had taken place the night before. And so I have in my hand the Scottish Sun. I read it in great detail because it was fascinating. Now we know that the perpetrator was named Usman Khan, and he was convicted in 2012 of planning to take down the London Bridge, also to attack the then mayor of London, which was Boris Johnson, to attack his home and other plans like that. He was a terrorist. He was a student of that Chakman, that radical cleric in London. And Usman Khan he served 8 years of his sentence, and they decided because of the Labour Party's liberal policies about letting criminals go early, he was released after 8 years. So he was still supposed to not enter London, and yet they gave him a special pass on that particular day last week to attend a criminal justice reform seminar supported by sponsored by Cambridge. So he goes into the room and he starts stabbing people. He stabbed a young man. He stabbed a woman and killed her. He stabbed, as I understand it, as many as 10 other people. And as I read in the paper here, some of them have life-changing injuries, which I don't know what that means, but you can only imagine. And so then he goes to London Bridge and he's got one of the knives taped to his arm, and they're long kitchen knives. They're huge knives. And he's wielding these knives, you know, with the intention, of course, of killing people. But what happened was I'm not sure London has seen anything quite like this. They had at least six different people from totally different walks of life come out of the woodwork to defend and protect the people of London. One of them was a Polish guy who worked in the kitchen where this started. The attack started in some, I can't remember the name of it, but it's some kind of food facility. And the cook there, or one of the cooks, was a Polish guy. His name was Lukasz. He was a Polish immigrant. He was working as the chef. It's called Fishmonger's Hall. And he grabbed a tusk from a whale, and that's what he used as his weapon. Remember that the British cannot carry guns. They have nothing to protect themselves. So the Polish Lukasz, the cook, in this Fishmonger's Hall, takes this tusk down from the wall and goes after Khan. And even though he's cut, meaning the Polish guy, the Polish cook was cut by the knife, he did not give up. He started out after Usman Khan. He chased him down on the bridge, and you can see that tusk in the pictures as they're trying to stop him. Now, others pulled out like a fire extinguisher and started using them against the terrorist Usman Khan, and then two guys that were from a tour company. I think it's called Small Cars Big Tours or something like that. They jump. They're going to pick up customers, and they jump out of their respective cars and they run toward. One of them actually grabs the knife, the knife that's not taped down, from the terrorist's hand, and man, they take him down. They pin him down. And then the police are there within 5 minutes, and they now have London. It didn't used to have this. The policemen didn't used to be able to carry guns, but they have a team now that are able to carry guns. And they were there within 5 minutes. They rolled one of them said that this Usman Khan kept shouting, you know, "Let me go, leave me alone, let me go," as though, you know, nothing had really happened, as though it was just an ordinary day and they were inconveniencing him. And when the police rolled him over, they saw what looked like a suicide vest, and the Usman Khan starts reaching for the vest, and then they shot him point blank right there on the street. So it was a very, very dramatic thing for London Bridge. Is beautiful. If you've been to London, well, it's just kind of the heart of the city. It separates two sides of London. It's something that pedestrians use all the time. It is like the worst kind of violation, really, to think that you're not safe in the heart of your city in midday. This happened in midday. And so, but the significance of this and the reason I played the Boris Johnson clip for you at the first is, of course, they're in the middle of this Brexit battle, which we've talked about so often. And by the way, could I just interject our cab driver that took us from Edinburgh to St. Andrews? It's, again, an hour drive, so you have a long time to talk. Shocked me to death because he is all in favor of Brexit and he likes Donald Trump. And I'm telling you that in Scotland, that's rare. I don't know if people are changing there or what, but the Scots are more liberal than the Brits. And they're all part of Great Britain, but the Scots, you know, are always trying to pull away and be independent from Great Britain. And they are, in many, many ways, much more liberal than people in England. And so I was shocked by that. But here's the deal. The Boris Johnson has been trying to get Brexit to go through. The Labour Party and the just like our Senate and House do not want to do the people's bidding. They want to do what they want to do. And they have become very bold in ignoring the will of the American people. That's what's happened to Britain. And so Boris Johnson has not been able to, after being an elected prime minister, he has not been able to get to land the plane on Brexit, as it were, because the parliament keeps stopping. They just will not, whatever he tries to do, they stop him. Sound familiar? And so he finally, in exasperation, their system is a parliamentary one. It's not like ours. They can disband parliament and call for another national election, which is what they've done. I think it's the second or third time this year. So they have an election coming up, and you've got Boris Johnson running, who's a conservative, who's, you know, they compare him to Donald Trump all the time. I think he's just he's a plain-spoken person, and he fights like crazy, as you heard with that interview. And so people are just the regular people. In Great Britain, I think, are fed up with their elite leaders, which is the way it's the same but different. It is the same but different. And so Jeremy Corbyn is the Labour Party candidate, and he's extremely liberal. It's under his policies. In fact, he expressed in a public interview, which I didn't pull for you, but he talked about how, you know, terrorists may not – he disagrees with Boris Johnson that terrorists – should be made to serve their entire term. There are cases, he thinks, where they should be let off, and violent criminals as well. You see, they're going through this whole criminal justice reform thing the same way we are. I've neglected to talk about that for a while. I hope to do an entire show on it. But we are having our criminals released into our streets early now, and there are all kinds of crimes being committed, which I have not brought to your attention, and you're certainly not going to see it in your headlines because it's a very popular thing to be in favor of, the so-called criminal justice reform. But just like what happened in Britain over the weekend, there is going to be a very serious day of reckoning for all of the criminals that are being let out of prison earlier. That doesn't mean there's never a case to let them out, never a case to show mercy. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that wisdom is now being applied to this right now. And so Britain has this now huge case of this man killing two and slashing all of these people because he was let out on this leniency program. So Jeremy Corbyn is on the record as promoting this leniency. And they're racing toward this next election, which is this month. This is December 2nd. It's happening early in this month. I don't know the day exactly. It's a huge turning point for them, where they're seeing what happens when liberal policies are put into place. The people of San Francisco are learning that even those that are on the left are seeing their streets destroyed. They're seeing their safety infringed upon by leftist policies. So are the people of LA. And people are rising up and saying, wait a second. Whether it's too late to pull it back, I don't know. But the people of London, of Great Britain, have a chance to pull it back coming up in just a matter of days in Great Britain. So that will be very interesting. All right. Meanwhile, back home, of course, the hearings by the Intelligence Committee, the Odd Committee, led by Adam Schiff, the Impeachment Committee, I guess you could call it, wrapped up at least the first week. And as a result of that, if you were still in the United States, now I didn't get to hear this, but I heard it this morning. I'm going to let you know what you have been hearing in case you missed it. This is clip one.
The case for impeachment has never been stronger. The evidence never so riveting after yesterday's explosive testimony.
Kicking off what promises to be another explosive week in the impeachment inquiry.
We're bracing for potentially an explosive opening statement.
Those are some of the fireworks from today's explosive testimony. Another explosive day of testimony.
High stakes heading into a potentially explosive week of testimony.
The most explosive thing.
This is a slow motion explosion.
Major breaking news right now. The explosive, truly explosive opening remarks. I can't emphasize how explosive this is. How
okay,
explosive.
All right, right. Explosive. You know what? It goes on for 2 minutes and 17 seconds. Just clips from various news agencies. That was Wolf Blitzer on CNN, the last one. You think they don't have talking points that they don't like cooperate on? Well, if you thought they didn't, then I hope you now know that they absolutely do. They are they take their marching orders. This press that's cooperating to undermine and resist. It's not the resistance. If it were only the resistance to President Trump, it would be bad. It would be wrong. It would be unconstitutional. It would be unconscionable. But it is not just their resistance to him. It is their resistance to the American people. It's the flyover country. It's the icky people. It's the deplorables that they hate. And they do hate us. And so they go after us by going at Donald Trump. Just don't forget that. This is about you and me. It's not just about President Donald Trump. And so they are, you know, taking a victory lap, thinking, of course, and claiming, trying to convince you. Explosive. What did Wolf Blitzer say? I'm not kidding. It's really explosive. This is explosive. They're talking about the hearings that happened last week. And I think Chris Wallace must have agreed because he played a montage on Fox News Sunday, which kind of points out how explosive those hearings were. Let's listen to clip two.
The meeting President Zelensky wanted was conditioned on the investigations of Burisma and alleged Ukrainian interference in the 2016 U.S. elections.
It is improper for the President of the United States to demand a foreign government investigate a U.S. citizen and a political opponent.
Mr. Giuliani's requests were a quid pro quo for arranging a White House visit for President Zelensky.
No, it's so bizarre. Okay, so that was Adam Schiff. And of course, he's, now I can't even remember honestly what he exactly said just then because I was making notes on Vindman. Then jumps in, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, and said it's improper for a president to say these kinds of things to a Ukrainian president or for any foreign president. Improper, he says. He declares it so. It must be so. And then, of course, Gordon Sondland, the ambassador, ends up by saying that Mr. Giuliani's proposal to investigate the Bidens was just wrong. But then we get into this, and we find out that Gordon Sondland, you can deconstruct each of these testimonies easily. It's not obscure. It's not even a toss-up. Gordon Sondland, then when he's pressed, and you know we played these clips before I left, Gordon Sondland never had a conversation with the president. The president never said to him that this was a quid pro quo. And by the way, could I just say that wouldn't have been a crime anyway because presidents do that all the time. But let's argue the point they're trying to make. He never said that. And then when he's pressed by the Republican congressman, he finally admits that, well, he heard somebody say it, that somebody else said it, that somebody else said it. And so it must be true, of course. And that's basically his and then we find out that Gordon Sondland is being threatened by a congressman from Oregon. His business is being threatened. It's just unbelievable things that were unraveling about that particular testimony. And then Vindman, John Solomon has a whole article that I will commend to you. I don't have time to go through all the details, but this is what it says. John Solomon, again, is this great investigative reporter. And Lieutenant Vindman, I'll read to you what John says. The article's titled, Responding to Lieutenant Colonel Vindman About My Ukraine Columns with the Facts. I honor and applaud Lieutenant Colonel Vindman's service to this country. He's a hero. I respect his decision to testify, but I also know the liberties that Lieutenant Colonel Vindman fought on the battlefield to preserve permit for a free and honest debate in America, one that can't be muted by the color of a uniform or the crushing power of the state. So I want to exercise my right to debate Lieutenant Colonel Vindman about my testimony. He goes on and talks. He says Vindman said that all the elements of John Solomon's writings and investigations are false. And so John just lays them all down with all of his information, and he says that Vindman's trying to ruin his reputation. What he's written is absolutely solid. We'll put this article on our Facebook page. That's at least two of the three we got to anyway of the testimonies that are supposed to be so startling from last week. Bradley Roda.
And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Acts 17:26 conveys to us the reality that we were born and placed in the 21st century by God's specific design. He determined before time where we would live and when we would live there. If you're in Minnesota, Mississippi, or Maine, God put you there on purpose. He's not surprised by the darkness we see around us, nor is he caught off guard by it. In fact, he specifically prepared for it by making sure you're alive right now. God can do whatever he wants, but he's chosen to use you and me as ambassadors of his kingdom. We are his torches to light up the darkness.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Christmas. The time of year we gather together to celebrate the birth of Jesus. We hang our decorations, cook our food, and wrap our gifts. Speaking of gifts, the AFA Naughty or Nice retailer list is now available. So as you do your shopping, you can make sure you support those that support Christmas. Visit AFA.net to find the AFA Naughty or Nice retailer list. And make sure you keep Christ in Christmas.
To sharpen the biblical worldview of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ. That is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. I'm host David Wheaton, inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, as we discuss all matters of life and faith from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Patriotism, they say, is the last refuge of a scoundrel. Well, in that case, there are a lot of scoundrels in the House of Representatives. They pretended impeachment was about preserving democracy, but it's not. That's why the basis for impeachment keeps shifting. First, it was a thing of value, then it was quid pro quo, and now, after doing focus groups on which accusation sounds the worst, it's bribery. This has always been an impeachment in search of a crime. The truth is, the president's opponents hate him. They hate it that he fights back, unlike every Republican president before him. They hate it that he protects religious liberty, babies in the womb, and our southern border. They hate him because they don't like his personality. In other words, this is not an impeachment. It is a hate crime directed against the president of the United States.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Trump and the First Lady spent Thanksgiving in Afghanistan with U.S. troops. While he was at it, Mr. Trump reset the terms for renewed talks with our principal enemy there, the Taliban. The president prides himself on being an accomplished negotiator, stipulating that the Taliban agree to a ceasefire, something they had heretofore refused to do, is a classic technique of moving the goalposts to improve the likely outcome of such talks. Mr. Trump should now double down by establishing conditions under which such a ceasefire would likely conduce to an actual peace with security for the Afghan people. He should replace most of the remaining U.S. forces in country with contractors to support Afghanistan's armed forces while adopting the successful Vietnam-era CORDS counterinsurgency model for securing the population. That's a formula for victory, not surrender to the Taliban. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Congressman, you know, we heard your closing at what we all thought was the end of this impeachment inquiry or whatever they call it. And it was concise, it was forceful, and it was factual. And then Adam Schiff, at the end, gets to do his whole thing again. But did they give you any indication of what's coming next?
Well, we now know that this coming week, Jerry Nadler is going to start, phase two of the circus. Now,
Jerry Nadler has been in the witness protection program now for several months after he botched the Mueller probe. So we're going to see how this goes. Suppose you're going to have, like, talk about the constitutionality of impeachment. And look, during the Nixon impeachment hearings, you had an actual break-in. You knew what the crime was. During the Clinton impeachment, you knew that he had lied to a grand jury. I think for 2 weeks, one of the things we were able to expose is that not only did they not have a quid pro quo, they actually had to change quid pro quo to bribery until John Ratcliffe pointed out that the only person that had ever been accused of bribery in Adam Schiff's star chamber down in the basement of the Capitol was Joe and Hunter Biden. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're at right now. We'll see. I think it's just phase two of the circus.
It was Devin Nunes reporting to Judge Jeanine last night on Fox News. And, of course, it is going to happen. Wednesday is the first hearing for now the House Judiciary Committee under Jerry Nadler. And you remember, do you remember watching those hearings with Bob Mueller, with Gerald Nadler? They really were a disaster. And many people think that the reason why Gerald Nadler and the House Judiciary Committee, which is normally the one that would hear about impeachments, the reason it was farmed over to intelligence was because they felt that that Adam Schiff could do a much better job than Gerald Nadler. So now it's coming back to that committee, and so the hearings are on Wednesday. Now, last night, Gerald Nadler gave President Trump up until I don't know what time yesterday to decide if he wants to send legal representation or testify himself in front of this Wednesday's hearings. And the president's attorney last night issued a scathing response saying that this is ridiculous. You don't even know who your witnesses are. It looks like they're saying right now they're going to have experts on impeachment testify. There are going to be four of them, but they're not named and nobody seems to know who they are. We know that three of them are in favor of impeaching Donald Trump, but one of them is not. I should say that differently. Three of them will make the case that his actions so far reach the level of impeachment, and one of them does not believe that. So it's three against one, and they gave the president no time to prepare. They don't even know their report, which is coming out from Schiff's committee, is not coming out till Tuesday night. And so there is no time to prepare any kind of defense, and plus they know that the president is going to be in London on Wednesday. So this is how convoluted and continually bizarre these hearings are. They're being done for a very different reason than actually finding what the truth is. And I have to say that, having lived through the Clinton and the Nixon impeachment inquiries, I've never seen anything like it. There were always shenanigans, always. But at least there was some attempt at giving some kind of fairness and an attempt to an ability to defend oneself. But they're acting like that, but they're not really doing that. So the president and this fiery email from his attorney are saying, there's no way, we are not, this is ridiculous what you're doing. We don't have enough warning. We don't know who your witnesses are, so we can't prepare. No one's ever heard of anything like this, and we will not be participating. And so it's a long letter. It's about 5 pages, and you'll be hearing about that in the news today. Doug Collins is saying, and of course he's the minority leader in the Judiciary Committee, he's saying that Adam Schiff is going to be the first witness called by the House Judiciary, and he should be called because he's been the one leading this inquiry. And so, of course, we'll see. Adam Schiff is not going to testify for them. He's not going to do that. Meanwhile, Dana Bash interviewed, and CNN interviewed Zoe Lofgren, and she makes the observation that Zoe is the only one in the House that was actually present during the Nixon impeachment and the Clinton impeachments, they have this exchange. I want you to hear it.
The intelligence chairman, Adam Schiff, says President Trump's conduct has been far more serious and beyond anything that Nixon did. You were there. We're seeing pictures of it. Do you agree?
Actually, I do agree. The president, President Nixon's misconduct related to trying to use the levers of government to hide the Watergate burglary his misconduct had to do with trying to throw the election. But at least it didn't involving other foreign nations. If you take a look at what the founding fathers were concerned about, it was the interference by foreign governments in our political system that was one of their gravest concerns. Nixon's behavior didn't fall into that range. So in that way, this conduct is more serious.
You know what? The good news is I was there too, and I remember this. I'll tell you what I remember. Yeah, the break-in into Watergate was illegal. The President Nixon should never have done that. But this is what was happening. The Democrats at the time were breaking down. They were doing all kinds of unlawful things. They were leaking a private psychologist files. Daniel Ellsberg was leaking his files. There were so many things that you can imagine now. It was unfathomable then that either of the parties would totally break the law and break down the rule of law in the exercise of trying to gain power. But that's what the Democrats were doing then. I know that won't be a shock to you. Some of you will be, because you were Democrats then, or you maybe still are. But the truth about the Watergate break-in, which people was never reported because the Washington Post was not going to tell you this, the reason why President Nixon and his men unlawfully did this, and they shouldn't have, but this is what their motivation was, that they thought that the DNC was working with Cuba to undermine the presidency of Richard Nixon. And so that's why they felt justified in doing that. And but that never came to light, but it's part of the story. So, yeah, Zoe Laughrin's right that Nixon wasn't, you know, calling on foreign powers to help, but he thought the DNC was. And so anyway, so that's kind of the I thought that was kind of an ironic statement on her part. I wanted you to hear it. Okay, so there are two races that are taking place right now. And see if I can explain this. Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff are hurrying this impeachment along because they're trying to get ahead of this Inspector General's report, which is coming out a week from today. December the 9th. Michael Horowitz's report is coming out. But it's not just that. It's also court things that are happening in the courts. Just while I was gone, this is probably one of the stories that grabbed me the most. If I can find the information so I can have the exact words for you. I'll remember. The Justice Department is asking the judge in the Michael Lieutenant General Flynn case to hold off on reaching a conclusion until the Inspector General's report comes out. And the inference is, that's really unusual, could I just say? The inference is that evidence was messed with. And we've talked about this a great deal. Something was not right in that case. What happened? What did the FBI do? What did the Mueller team do? What were they doing? This is part of what's going to come out. And so the theory is, and I think it's true, that Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff are trying to rush through this impeachment. They want to get it done before Christmas. And they'd like to get it done before the Inspector General's report becomes the narrative, if indeed the other news sources actually report it. They're trying to get this the president labeled with having been impeached. And they're trying to do that as quickly as they can because they're afraid the narrative or the news cycle or the thing that occupies people's minds will be this report and all the bad behaviors of the people involved. Or the judges in the courts will rule in such a way that we'll find out that even the basis for their whole impeachment will fall apart. And so there are a lot of things going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. Now, Lindsey Graham, meanwhile, has requested that the State Department documents on the Bidens, Joe and Hunter, and their correspondence with Obama administration officials and the Ukraine be released. This is what he's asking. All documents and communications, including call transcripts or summaries related to the vice president's phone calls with President Poroshenko on February 11, 18, and 19 of 2016, and especially with respect to whether Vice President Biden mentioned the prosecutor general's investigation into Burisma. There's more to that, but that you get the idea. I mean, that's pretty, I'm telling you, that's pretty amazing. Joe Biden was a senator, and generally the senators align with each other and protect each other. And so, but Lindsey Graham's going after those information because they think Joe Biden and his son Hunter were up to no good. That's why they're doing that. And also, of course, Lindsey Graham announced that the Inspector General will release that report on Monday, December 9th, and he will testify before the Senate on Wednesday, December 11th. So this is also why this impeachment, they're getting into a frenzy. They don't even know who their people are going to be or going to testify on Wednesday. Because they're trying to push this thing through as quickly as they can so that they can impeach the president before the story is changed. The narrative is switched. before people are consumed by the information that's going to come out. Now, here's the thing. My understanding is that this last week, once Lindsey Graham announced the date of the Inspector General's report coming out, Washington Post, I think it was the New York Times as well, started leaking all kinds of information or getting information out about what might be in these reports. I'll give you an idea. This was actually on CNN. This is clip four.
The origins of the Russia probe and what there's somebody under investigation right now?
That's right, Wolf. This is an investigation that began and was found as part of the probe that's being done by Michael Horowitz, the Inspector General for the Justice Department. And what he found was that there was an employee at the FBI who altered a document that was used in the preparation for one of the FISA warrants, one of the warrants, surveillance warrants, that was done against Carter Page, who was the Trump campaign aide. This document, whatever changes were made, was substantive enough to change the meaning of the document. We don't know a lot more about it. We don't
know,
for instance,
I'm going to interrupt him because we're going to run out of time. But that was CNN breaking that. So that was unusual. But here's the deal. There are two different narratives here. So we'll see which one is right. The first narrative is that the New York Times and the Washington Post, and I don't know what other, probably CNN, are claiming that this Michael Horowitz report is going to be a dud, that he's not going to hold FBI members to account or Justice Department officials, that it's going to be kind of just no big deal, ho-hum, business as usual. But meanwhile, all of the people that are involved or suspected, including Lisa Page, who's now giving public interviews, are acting as though they're going to be exonerated. But what the other narrative is that they're scared stiff. I'm hearing from others on the inside who say that this report is going to be very damning. I honestly don't know. How would I know? Nobody really knows. But people that I trust think it's going to have more substance in it than the Washington Post and the New York Times would like you to believe. And on the issue that it was just revealed to Wolf Blitzer in that exchange, the FBI lawyer that was outed by Washington Post has been identified by Kevin Kleinsmith. Now, what they are trying to say, as the left is revealing this, that this FBI attorney, Kevin Kleinsmith, altered evidence in order to get a FISA warrant. That is hugely illegal. That is so big, and it looks as though he's entangled with two other, either FBI lawyer, maybe one FBI lawyer and another justice official, all working together to do this, to make it possible to get this FISA application in the court to surveil Carter Page, which was all illegal, altered the evidence in order to do an illegal surveillance of Carter Page and we think others as well. And what they're saying about Kevin Kleinsmith, that he was low level. He was no big deal. He wasn't a higher up of the FBI. And we're learning now a lot more about him. Turns out he was the one charged with overseeing the Hillary Clinton email investigation. He was also working with Peter Strzok. He was right there with all of them. And so that's not really true. They're trying to downplay that. We also know now that Kleinsmith was very vocal about his part of the resistance. We have some of his texts now. He says, "Vive la resistance." That's what he tweets in one of his tweets. He's bragging about doing all he can to stop, you know, this. He says, "I'm so stressed about what I could have done differently. It's just hard not to feel like the FBI caused some of this." He's talking about the victory of Donald Trump. It was razor thin and the crazies finally won. This is the Tea Party on steroids. And the GOP is going to be lost. We have to fight this again. Also, Pence is stupid. And on he goes. This is the FBI lawyer who altered evidence. Now, he's just one person, Kevin Kleinsmith. You're going to be hearing a lot about this. And that report, of course, is going to come out a week from today. And we will then know whether indeed heads are going to roll or if it is going to be a whitewash. Justice must be done, and that's what I pray for. We just pray for justice. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.